Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. We go a little farther afield for this month's Fit for You segment. New Jersey-based freelance writer and runner Jen Miller wrote an article for the New York Times last fall that described her journey through weight gain and loss, all the while she was competing in marathons. The article was shared across social media and continues to prompt discussion about what a healthy body looks like. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski reached Miller on Skype to ask her about the story and why it's so important to shatter the myth of the perfect runner's body.
In 2013, I ran the New Jersey Marathon, and I ran well, but I hurt my foot, and I was out of running for some time. I nearly broke my foot, so of course, you're going to have to take some time off. So I wasn't really able to run again seriously for almost a year. I did a half marathon in the fall, but I really didn't start cranking up again for almost a year, and I kept eating like I was running all the time, and I was sort of working through some stuff in my personal life that I was unhappy about. I work from home, so I don't wear pants that have a drawstring. I didn't realize how high I'd gotten until I went to the doctor and I got weighed, and I realized I was getting close to overweight because I don't keep a scale in my house, so I wasn't really keeping track of it. So then I realized, oh, I'm there, but I'm still running marathons. So I was still running. I wasn't running as well, but I was still doing all this stuff. And when you're training for a marathon, it's really hard to diet, quote unquote, because you're so hungry all the time. And I wasn't paying enough attention to what I was eating. I was just eating whatever I felt like eating. And in any context, no matter whether you're, you know, you walk your dog twice a day or you're running 10, 11, 12 hours a week, that doesn't work out. The calories never balance themselves if you're eating more than you're burning. And that's pretty much what happened.
So you mentioned you don't keep a scale in your house. How did you come to decide that?
I wrote this memoir called Running a Love Story that was published in March, and that chronicled some earlier issues that I had with food, starting when I was in a sorority in Florida. Not that it was the sorority's fault, but it was a high concentration of women in a state where people are pretty naked most of the time.
Right.
So there was pressure in that sort of circumstance to be small, and my tactic about it was to just not eat a lot of food. I would try to go as long as possible during the day and not eat anything, which is totally unhealthy and awful. And then I got into a relationship in my 20s with someone who had a drinking problem. And he tried to get me to be as tiny as possible. And I ate less. And sometimes I would binge and throw up. So after I found running after that relationship and started running more, I said, I need to get better with food. And got rid of the scale after that because I didn't want to micromanage my life. So when I hit 165 on the scale and I decided to make a change, I didn't just rely on every time I had to go to the doctor. I bought a scale and decided to weigh myself every Wednesday when I woke up, and I still do that now.
So you mentioned your relationship with food changing before running and then after running, and most of the population that works out were amateur athletes, and we don't have a nutritionist on call and prepared meals for us. So how rigid are you now with meal planning and the types of food you eat after you've lost this weight that you gained?
Well, I did just finish my sixth marathon. So towards the end of that, I wasn't as good with the food as I usually am, but I was much more conscious in this training cycle of what I was eating and what I needed to do. I follow The Rock on Instagram. This will go somewhere, I promise. And he recently said that he needs to go from being in shape for the movie Baywatch, which was very lean, to being like a monster for the next Fast and Furious. So I've sort of taken that approach, not to being a monster. but marathon shape is one thing. But when I want to do a road mile, which is what that article you're referencing is about, I'm much more careful about what I eat. Fortunately, the road mile that I run is in September, and that means I can eat the best of Jersey fresh produce all summer. So that means that eating healthier doesn't taste bad. That sounds pretty cheesy, but
right.
It's just, it's easier than when I have to rely on a conventional grocery store. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I'm not strict at all. I have a general outline of what I eat when I'm trying to do this and get, you know, muscle tone and all that. The story actually was published in October. But the New York Times keeps sponsoring it on Facebook, and I know when it does it because I get a whole fresh batch of emails. People wanted to know exactly what I ate. They wanted to know my meal plan, my calorie count. One person demanded to know whether or not I ate sweet potatoes. And I don't like sweet potatoes, so it was
right.
like a not a valid not a question that applied to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was never that strict with it because when I get that strict with it, I get insane with it. And then I tip into unhealthy eating.
Right.
So it's just a general outline that I try to follow. And if I don't, you know, life moves on.
Yeah. So do you just change it slightly based on the events that you're training for versus a marathon versus a mad mile or anything else like that?
I just wrote a big nutrition guide for running for the New York Times. So this is fresh on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really low carb versus high carb. It's high carb versus high fat. When I'm training for a road mile, I tend to go with what would sound like a high fat diet. It's our relationship with the word fat is a little screwy. It's just less carbs. It's more like dark meat, chicken, whole fat dairy, that sort of stuff. That works for me when I'm lifting. That does not work for me at all when I'm training for a marathon. So I had higher portions of carbohydrates. However, I was burning so much stuff every single day that I needed that because carbohydrate is the jet fuel that makes your muscles move. And I was trying to be a fast little short brick of a rocket that I am. So I've taken 2.5 weeks to start transitioning back into fewer carbohydrates, much more protein. I don't do it overnight because that's crazy. My body is not like, I can't snap my fingers and make my body run on an entirely different set of fuel. So it'll progress over the summer too. It will get more refined as I get to race day, as any, you know, athlete, amateur or not, sort of fine tones and gets to the spot they want to be. And then I, you know, eat whatever I want for a week. That's pretty much how it goes.
Right. With meal planning, and there's obviously, as you know, a plethora of articles out there that say, you know, here's a magic formula, here's a calorie calculator. It's a lot of information that can be overwhelming for many people trying to make a magic formula to lose weight or to fuel their exercise in a better way. Do you think too much information is the problem nowadays that can cause bad eating habits, not necessarily starving oneself, but crazy limiting? What's your advice to people to try and find their meals that work for them and their bodies?
Know that there is no magic formula. You have to try stuff out to see what works for you. And please don't follow the latest hot trend. I had a lot of people email like, oh, this is paleo or this is gluten-free. I'm like, no. I don't pay attention to any of that sort of stuff. I try to eat whole food that hasn't been processed a lot. That's not unprocessed food, food that hasn't been processed a lot. Because even yogurt could be considered processed food if you think about it. Try stuff out that works for you. This works for me. Two different diets work for me in two different settings of physical activity. They're not going to work for everybody. You know, I don't make money from running. Sometimes I win like a trophy and a $25 gift certificate. I make my money writing. So I am not going to sacrifice all that much in my life to be as tiny and as in best shape as I can possibly be. So that's part of it too. Does that make any sense? Am I rambling too much?
No, that absolutely makes sense. I think also what you're going along the lines of is the mindset is all that it's about. And you train and ran for 2 marathons at your heaviest. And you mentioned in the article, you're obviously dissatisfied with the time you finish them in. But nonetheless, it was completing marathons nonetheless, you know, a feat that many people find incredibly daunting. But are these races tainted for you because of the weight increase?
No, absolutely not. One of the races was extremely hilly and I hadn't trained for the hills. So there was that. And then, the second one was the New York City Marathon in 2014. And I have, severe eczema and I ended up having an outbreak before the race and I was on a lot of drugs and not the fun kind. So there was that going into it. And I think the New York City Marathon was the hardest race I ever had. And sometimes when things are not going well, whether it's in a run or it's in life or something, I think about how I still managed to cross that finish line, feeling out of shape, not feeling great. The weather was not the best conditions. So I sort of keep that as something, if you can do that, then you can do this. There's a picture of me in the New York City Marathon in 2014 that ran with the story next to me running the 2015 Fifth Avenue Mile. And I didn't notice how big of a difference there was. You know, I felt it in my clothes and the way I looked. I didn't realize how much of a difference there was until I saw those pictures put next to each other by the New York Times. So I think it's important to have that record. And I also think it's important to know that there was nothing wrong with 165 pounds. Absolutely nothing. I was healthy. I was running marathons, as you said. My doctor said I was great, but I didn't feel comfortable at that weight. And it was about feeling comfortable in your own skin and feeling like yourself again. So there was nothing wrong with that picture. There was nothing wrong with those races, except that the times were slower than I wanted them to be. But it is nice to have that photo to remember what it was like to train at a heavier weight and how much better it is to not.
Right. And also along those lines, you mentioned that you felt a little bit less of a feminist because you encouraged like all women's bodies, any shape or size are beautiful, yet you felt that guilt associated with the weight gain once you were in that doctor's office. Do you still battle with that doubt? And what do you think the message women should be receiving, especially from other women athletes?
So the concern about this almost kept me from writing the story, because I know I have friends who are 165 pounds and they look great and they don't have a problem with it, or they feel bad about it and I don't think that they should. So I didn't want to shame anybody, even if the number was not 165, just saying, well, I'm heavier than that or I'm less than that. I needed to use the number in order to get the story across. And I told my editor, I said, I don't know if I want to touch anything about weight because it's such a sensitive topic. And we're all so different, but there's BMIs and all this stuff that might say that I'm healthy and somebody else is not. And it's just very complicated. It's a very complicated emotional issue for a lot of people in this country. And the way that women are judged for how they look is a whole big other bucket of stuff. And I didn't even know if I didn't know if I wanted to kick that bucket and see what was in there. And, you know, it became a feminist thing because it wasn't really about what anybody else saw me as at 140 pounds or 165 pounds. It's how I felt as an amateur athlete at either weight. And that was the point. I was unhappy with some stuff in my life. And one of the results of that was that I was not paying attention to what I was eating. I was not eating the right foods that would have fueled me as an athlete. And I wanted to change that. So it was about what I wanted to do, not what anyone else told me to do. Because, oh boy, let me tell you, a lot of people had an opinion about my appearance after that story ran. There were some people who told me I was still fat at 140 pounds that I looked skeletal at 140 pounds. And I just, you know, that's not the point. That's not the point. But, you know, you can't argue with commenters, and they're going to take what you say and filter it through themselves however they want to. But I should accept my body at any weight, shape, or size in theory. However, I want to run faster, so that's why I did it.
How important is time and pace to you in the sport? And did the weight loss center on improving your time? And do you feel it that it perhaps can keep a constant unhealthy pressure on runners to always improve your time and run faster and push harder?
I think it depends, and that's kind of a cop-out. It depends on what you're doing. So the 2016 New Jersey just ran on May 1st. I wanted to break my previous personal record. There were decisions I made to reach that goal. How much sleep did I get? Do I take a nap today? Do I have this much coffee? Do I go out tonight? Do I consume alcohol? That was all in the goal of wanting to set a new personal record in the marathon. And it was something I did for 18 weeks. And then it was over. So the rest of the year, you know, I'm going to run a firecracker 5K and run next to my friend who's running her first 5K. Every race has a different purpose. And you just have to figure out what it is. If every single race you ever do is to PR every single time, that might be unhealthy. Because then you might be missing the point of the sport, which it's a very communal sport. I think if you're always, I mean, it's like with anything, if you're obsessed on performing perfectly at every single opportunity and don't think about the other reasons why you're running, it can be unhealthy. I think that's true.
Running, as you mentioned, is a communal sport, yet also solitary at the same time in that you're competing with yourself and setting your own goals. But what is it about running that has kept you so diligent to the sport? How did you get into it after your personal struggles? What made you want to hit the pavement?
So my first 5K I ran almost 10 years ago because a magazine paid me $750 to and write about it. And I was a baby freelance writer at the time. And I thought, well, this is a great reason to run because I hated running before. I played soccer and softball in high school, and you only ran as punishment. So why would I just run for the sake of running? But that was why they gave me the assignment. Like, well, you hate running, so this will be a funny story. So I ran that 5K, and then I kept running in my repertoire of physical activity. And then three things happened in quick succession. The boyfriend I had at the time, who was an alcoholic and very unhealthy for me, broke up with me. He held my hand and said, I'll keep you in the top 8 of my MySpace friends. So that was nice.
Then my grandfather died. And then I decided to buy a house right before the recession hit. So being self-employed, I not only owned a house that wasn't worth what I paid for it, I also lost half my clients. So things were bad. So I decided to run a 10-mile road race. And that's really how I got into it, not just for the physical, but for the mental. It's really helped deal with the worst chunk of my life. But also I use it every day now, sort of a moderator to the day. So I just put an offer in on a house today.
Oh, hooray. Congrats.
Yeah, a new house.
Excellent.
Another house, not the one I own now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very stressful, especially because it's, we're going to take your best offer and that's it. So I don't know, what do I bid? What do I do this? Do I offer this? Do I do that? So then I went out and I took a slow run, fast hike after, mm-hmm. because I'm still recovering from the marathon. And I felt so much better after. So it's become part of my life that just makes everything seem better. I don't know. Even when things are bad, I can still go out and run or take that fast hike because my legs are still beat up from setting my personal record and feel just a little bit better.
With the article and putting this out in the public, getting all this feedback, what is your overall takeaway from this experience? And do you feel pressure to live up to what you wrote?
So I wrote a story for the New York Times after this last marathon about running with family, because my mother runs now, and so does my sister. We all ran that day, and the photo that they ran was one at lunch we had after the marathon. So we all looked like crud. And I get very swollen after a race. So like my fingers get really swollen, my shoes are hard to put on, and my face, you know, is, and it's red too. My face was really red. And I had a moment of going, people are going to look at that photo and I think I gained all the weight back. There's a very popular Google search for Jen Miller height. So it's a little daunting because I feel like some people will come up to me at book events because I've been on book tour and they've read that article and that's how they found out about the book and bought the book because of it. Now they're seeing me in real life and it's like, oh, are you going to think that I'm, you know, oh, did she gain the weight back or stuff like that? But I think that's a general cultural obsession with weight and appearance. There's a lot more pressure to live up to being the person who loves running as someone who just published a book about running, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sort of book publishing and that's its own weird thing. It's fun, but it's weird. You tell people about your entire life and then they critique it. That's like, oh, that's a lot.
Right. And then they have to answer for it, apparently.
Right, right. People want to know more. And I'm like, no, I wrote a whole book about it. That's cool.
Yeah.
I said what I had to say there.
So as someone who has come into running as a way to deal with personal struggle, what words of advice or encouragement do you have for, you know, the novice runner who's going to run a first 5K or even someone who's continuing and adding on more marathon or half marathons to their docket?
Don't be scared of it. A lot of people say they won't do a full marathon, even if they've done multiple half marathons, because they are so scared of it. It's a scary thing. You see people come off marathon courses with bleeding nipples and collapsing and calves that seize up. And, you know, it's a scary thing. It kept me from running a marathon for a while. But don't be scared of it. That's especially true for people who want to start but don't know how. I found they don't even know where to begin. And I didn't even know where to begin. I was fortunate that the magazine paid for me to have a running coach. Couch to 5K is fantastic. It's helped thousands of people start running. It combines walking and running. And it's really just the best way to get into running. Because if you just try to go out and run a mile and you haven't run since high school, it's not going to be a pleasant experience. So keep trying. Find your local running club. Find your tribe, find your community, because then you can start talking to people like, is this normal? Or should I be chafing in my sports bra? Or, oh, okay, well, I can get Body Glide and that will stop that. Or maybe I need a different size. Having sort of a group that can help you with that can keep you in the sport and it can keep you accountable too, because they'll start knowing when you run and what you're doing and they'll ask you about it. And then if you share with them your successes, they will congratulate you and keep you going.
Well, thank you for opening up your running life and your personal life and writing this article and kind of dispelling the myth of a runner's body and the struggles we all go through.
Sure. Thank you for letting me talk about it more.
Jen Miller is a freelance writer based in New Jersey. There's a link to her New York Times article, Crossing the Finish Line 25 Pounds Lighter, at WUWM.com. Miller spoke with Audrey Nowakowski.